With another edition of the Stampede Wrestling Show.
Welcome to Heartbeat Radio, brought to you by Powerhouse Radio Network. This is your guest host tonight, Johnny Mantell, and we're bringing you a special show tonight about the special one, Owen Hart. My guest coming on, we got a big crew of guests coming on, so I'm going to just say it early and often, y'all. I got a lot of people wanting to call and get a little piece of the show tonight. We have an hour and 44 minutes, and then at the end we're going to play a special message from, of course, the famous one, Jeff Jarrett. Him and Owen were very close, and Jeff's going to come on and finish the show out with a little interview that him and Bruce did earlier in the week, and we want to thank Jeff ahead of time for that, for those great comments about Owen. Again, I got a lot of people calling in tonight, so I want to tell everybody I'm going to bring you on. We're going to tell our stories. Then I'm going to put you on hold and let you listen back, and Bruce and our guests will make comments on those. So please stick with us. I know we're getting over. We're working on getting Bruce on air right now. And I know that early on I'm going to bring somebody out with me right now. So I got him on with me, and that's the Buzzing Man, B. Brian Blair. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Man, it's so good to talk to you right now. It's like I just saw you yesterday.
Well, you know, I tell people all the time, Brian, that when you're in this business and you travel and do the things that all of us did, we can go 20 years without seeing each other, and it's like seeing each other again. And it was a blast from the past to see you, and it was great seeing you. And we hope to see you again real soon, man. I got Bruce on the line with us. Bruce, how are you tonight, my friend? Bruce? Well, I'm losing Bruce for some reason. Brian, how are you doing? Everything good in your neck of the woods?
Yes, it is. In sunny Tampa, Florida. I mean, it's been great. We had a little shower, but the weather's super, and it's a Memorial Day weekend, and we're just in the USA thankful for all of our troops, especially actually in Canada and all around the world. Just remembering not only Owen tonight, but all those that sacrificed so that we could be free.
Absolutely, man. Our flags are flying proud here at the farm, and you know, we sort of had a little Tampa weather, I guess, today, because we had a little shower, the sun come out, and got some work done, and so we all had good days today, man. Jump right in and give us some thoughts and commentary on Owen.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to tell people something that most people don't know. I mean, Jeff or Mick or some close people may know, but when he came into WWF, I guess 88, 89 there, 88, I believe. Am I correct?
Yeah.
I'm trying to go back here and think, you know, it's been years. The one thing I'll never forget is Brett coming up to me and said, "Hey, my brother's coming into the territory or coming into WWF." He called it the territory, but Owen's coming into the territory, and Brett and I are, you know, close, always have been. I actually named my first son. We actually named our first son Brett after Bret Hart. Only we Americanized it with two T's. And Brett says, "Listen, you know, we got Kurt Hennig around, we got all these guys around, and Owen's coming in, and you know, we're not going to be on the same cards, and would you mind watching over Owen?" And I said, "Of course not, Brett. I'd love to." So Brett introduces Owen and I when he first came in, and we started riding together, and, oh, God, what fun we had. And one particular time he said, "Hey, Brian," he said, with that little Canadian twang, he said, "You know, Chico State, we're going to California," and he said, Chico State University was rated the number one party school, and if you go back, you'll see this is a fact, in Playboy magazine. When I start saying that, I think it's Stu, the patriarch. But anyway, I said, yeah, we can go there if you want. And anyway, we wound up going to Chico State University, and he said, I'd like to just go around and can we go to the dormitory? He was asking me if we could go to the dormitories and all this stuff. You know, he knew I went to college in Louisville and trying to get me to do something. I don't know what he had on his mind, but we wound up going to this place called Madison Beer Gardens. And when we got there, it was great. We had a great time on the way there, but they didn't take dollar bills. And Owen, being the sly guy that he was, he pulls out a $10 Canadian bill, and we're in California. And, you know, that's – so anyway, I wound up – you can't pay cash. So I bought, like, I don't know, 40 bucks worth of Madison Bear Garden beer bucks. And I actually still have about 20 of them right now, and I don't know, I guess 10 of them are Owens. Because it's just the way it is.
I'm on the queue on this one, too.
I think it's $10 Canadian bill.
Answer.
Hello?
That one for you, let me know.
Hey, Bruce.
Hello.
Hey, Bruce, I got you on, man. I was just letting Brian tell the story while we were getting you on.
Oh, yeah, I've been on for about 20 minutes, but the a few Owen might be ribbing on the... he might be doing something to get a rise out of me here, you know, from...
He might be
above
stepping in and wanting Brian to pass that $10 on to him.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the Madison Bear Garden beer bucks right now, and we go to this place, and it's a really cool place, and there's a lot of people, you know, a lot younger than us, and but we're having a good time, and Owen had all these great questions, and I forget who he randomly. There was a smart aleck there, and he decided to. The smart aleck kept being kind of smart aleck with us. I know you guys from TV. You know, you're Bee Brian Blair, you're the killer bee, and I'm not sure your name. You know, it was really like an introduction for Owen into the WWF. And finally, we were talking to this guy a little bit, and he got a little bit more smart aleck, And I just happened to have some Visenum and an old trick from Harley Race. And while we were at the Bear Gardens, Owen said, "Can I have that Visine, man? This guy's a pain in the ass." And anyway, he squirted like half the bottle in this guy's, poor guy's beer. And about 15 minutes later, the guy got so sick, he ran out of there, and he was gone. But without embellishing and making this story more than it really was. It was a fabulous time, and Owen was just tickled to death that he could rib this poor college student. And I'm sure he went and had the defecation of his lifetime, because that's what the Bison does. And Owen was...
Holy shit.
Owen was laughing so hard, and we were just sitting there the whole night just looking and analyzing. I mean, we had more, we were trying to analyze people and say, well, what do you think this guy's going to major in, or what do you think this person's going to do, or this girl, or that. It was just a fabulous two-hour, three-hour time that we had at Chico State University, and Owen said to me, "Brian, this is like just a fantasy to me. I mean, I can't believe that we're doing this, man. This is Chico." I didn't know what he was really talking about, because I didn't pay attention to that stuff. But to him, you know, being at Chico State University, the number one partying college, according to Playboy, in the whole United States of America, Owen was making the most of it. And he made me laugh. And I mean, he made me laugh and and cry almost because I just laugh so hard at the things that he would do and say to these college students. He was the wittiest kid that I had ever seen in my life. And, you know, I just thank Brett for allowing me to, you know, to babysit basically Owen for probably six weeks. And, you know, he got Owen obviously then went, he learned the ropes very quickly as he did all through his life. And people can say, people with much more experience than I can tell you about Owen, how, you know, he just took everything in and he was the life of the party. He was laughter personified. He was fun. He was a tremendous worker. He was tremendous at everything he did. And for the lack of stature and size, he made up for that 10 times in his ability to work. I mean, think about all the times when, you know, he had the ring in the backyard and he would do all the flips and the things that I heard that he did. And I only got to go to, unfortunately, I only got to go to Stu's place and the Hart Foundation, the Hart Mansion, when Owen passed, and went up there for his, you know, his last respects. And
I was greatly touched by guys like yourself, Brian, and everyone who was there. You know, it was like a real, really meant a lot to, I know, my dad and my mom and the rest of us. You know, you guys saw fit to take from your schedules and just come up, you know, and I'd like to definitely thank you again for your compassion and, you know, sincerity just coming up at that time. You know, I remember it meant a hell of a lot to me and to everyone else, just you guys were all there, you know, and it's like a big brotherhood, you know, so that really meant a lot to everyone. I didn't get a chance to personally thank you, but, you know, I'd like to thank all the others, if any of them are listening, you know, because as you recall, Brian, it was sort of like virtually everyone in the business, and I was touched by the fact that there was even a lot of non-WWF guys there at the time, like the Terry Funks, and Hogan was up there. He wasn't, I think he was in WCW at that time, and a lot of those other old legends, you know, the, you know, sort of like a who's who, so that was cool. I know my dad had a, you know, even though it was obviously a very sad time, he had a great time just visiting and catching up with so many of those, a lot of those old guys that were, you know, from his generation or the 60s and the earlier generations. And, so yeah, that was one of the things I remember that really made a great impression on me, just how all you guys you know, were, you know, decent and sincere enough to come up and just sort of be there for everyone. It did mean a hell of a lot to all of us.
Well, thank you, Bruce. You know, it just meant a lot just to be there. And you know, of course, we were there for Owen, but we were there for the family, because quite honestly, the Hart family, I'm from the school, the Matsuda School, which we always say is the toughest school in the world. When we're here in Florida, you know, many guys ran away without their clothes. But then when I go back and hear all the stories with Stu in the dungeon and got to go there and see that, and I understand that, you know, there was more than one toughest place in the world to break in. You know, I would have hated to be one of the guys.
Enough, I remember on he told me I remember I met you down in Hawaii, like 1980, I think, you know, and you were down there at that time, and Owen was there with me, just sort of a little kind of a snot-nosed kid at that time, but I remember you and Kevin Von Erich and
absolutely,
a few others that were down there at that time, you know, during that so-called promotion down there, you know, and, yeah, Owen, I remember at that time he was a huge fan. He was just a kid then, but he was greatly impressed with you and Kevin, and I think there was a few others that were down there that were, you know, sort of, you know, already sort of had established themselves as kind of top-notch stars. It meant a lot to him that you were even, you know, kind of decent enough to acknowledge him and treat him well back then. You know, I think Dwayne Johnson was kicking around then. He was sort of a young, around the same age as Owen, sort of a, you know, but it did mean a lot to him even at that time that, you know, us professionals like you and Kevin and some of them were, you know, treating him, you know, and not like a mark or whatever, you know. So, but yeah, I remember he it did stick in his mind. I remember years later I met Brian Blair, I met Kevin Von Erich. Like, that was, you know, great, made a great impression on him. So.
Well, you know, I tell you what, Bruce, I remember that now as you just rang the bell in my mind, and I remember that so vividly now. And, you know, always, like, Owen came from what you are and what the entire Hart family, those that I've been around and those that have broke in the territory there, and you can go on. I mean, it's like who's who. But, you know, everybody had respect. And
yeah, I remember he had, I think at that time you were Leroy's son-in-law or something like that. Or so I know he had, Owen was kind of like he'd grown up hearing Stu talk about all these iconic old legendary promoters and wrestlers, and Leroy was one of them, you know. So that seemed to mean a lot to Owen too, that you know, your affinity to legendary Leroy McGurk type thing, you know. So that, but yeah, it's funny how little things like that seem to stick in his head. Those things kind of it almost kind of reinforced, you know, his respect for people if they were part of the you know, the old school fraternity, or they had some roots in the business type things. So, but yeah, I remember that was quite vivid. I remember Owen was like, "Wow, I got to meet Kevin Von Erich and Brian Blair." You know, like that was, you know, pretty heady stuff for him back in those days. You know, I think he was maybe what, 14 or something like that at the time. So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was. You know, I was, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years older, and somewhere around there, and it was a good time. I enjoyed that the whole Hawaii thing, and, you know, not to sidetrack, but Kevin's a great guy, and I know that Kevin was, you know, that having the Von Erich legacy and the Hart legacy right there in Hawaii. You know, I'm still a wrestling fan, and.
Yeah, you, some you and Johnny, both myself, you know, it's, you know, I'm still passionate about the business, and I still kind of applaud a great match, and I gnash my teeth at proliferation of bullshit and stuff like that. You know, I'm always sort of seeing things about how the wrestling business comes out looking after something, you know, and sometimes I'm like, you know, good on them, even when I see stuff on Vinny's stuff or whatever. And unfortunately, all too often, I come away sort of shaking my head and saying, you know, this isn't good for the business, or it doesn't reflect well on what all these old guys like Leroy and Stu and Fritz and all these other guys were seeking when they were, you know, trying to make the business take it to the next level or whatever, you know. But
yeah, the evolution, you know, of the business is dynamic. And there's, you know, without a doubt, you know, if you take away the foundation, and, of course, you know, Stu and your family is part of the foundation, and, you know, you go up to Minneapolis was a foundation, and Florida was a foundation, and, of course, Vince Senior, you know, he had his foundation there, but nobody broke in there. It was either Calgary, it was Minneapolis, or it was Tampa. Those were the three territories where people broke in, and they were respected for. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce and Johnny. You know that. I mean, even you know Texas, and there was a lot of great places to break in. But as far as shooting and the dungeon type style, where you know people, whether you liked it or not, you either had to learn to survive with guys like your father, Hiro Matsuda, and Vern Gagne and his crew there that he would have.
Yeah, old Peasant Deck and Butch Levy and some of those old Ryan Genslater and some of them. But yeah, that was it was all about instilling respect, you know, and but I guess the proof is in the pudding because so many guys of great character and great workers, guys that were a great testimony to this business, seem to emerge from that, environment, you know. I think it was about respect, you know. I think Stu always told me it's not all about respecting themselves, but it was about respecting the business, you know. They and because of that, they, would defend it and, kind of uphold the integrity of it, you know, and they... And I think that's, something that I don't like to be railing on modern generation all the time, but I think all too often it's lost in the shuffle with some of the deviations I see today, you know. And I don't want to digress in this program because I want to reflect more on Owen, but yeah, that's something that... I think needs to never be lost as far as just the respect for the business and respect for yourself and for the people in it. You know, if there's, I think, more of that, I think the business would be in infinitely better for it.
Yeah. I agree. But and like you said, let's not digress. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to talk about Owen right now, and I just wanted to share my Madison Bear Garden story. It was the Chico State thing was the beginning of something that was very close for Owen and I, and it was a lot of fun. If you could have seen that guy, it just, oh, my God. But anyway, I have all smiles, and I know Owen is listening to this right now from another place. I have so much faith in God, and I believe that Owen is there in spirit with us right now, and he's going to hear everybody that's about to speak. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I mean, there's a great lineup. You got a great guy, Bob. Bob is a super person that lined all this stuff up, and you got Johnny Mantel. And what more can you say about a guy? And, you know, fabulous guy. You know, Johnny's right there, hosting this program. And so, you know, I'm going to leave what I said and let everybody else share their stories. And I look forward to listening. If anybody else has a question or something, that's fine. But otherwise, I just want to listen and be a mark.
Brian, thanks, buddy. Thanks so much, Brian, for being a part of the show tonight. The story and the ribs from Owen are classic, and that was a great way to start the show off. It was great seeing you here recently, man, and on behalf of Bruce and the entire Hart family, thanks so much for being on tonight. I'm going to put you in the queue where you can listen, and we're going to go to the next caller, okay?
Sounds great, Johnny. Thank you, man. See you soon.
All the best.
Thank you,
God bless.
You bet. Bless. Bruce. You know, Bruce, a great story, and I got to interject something here. I'm sort of an outsider. I had the privilege of meeting Owen one time. I don't know him as well as a lot of the boys do, but to me, I always took from our short meeting and our short visit, I took that here was the youngest of a family of legends, and he's taken a little bit from everybody. And with that, the cream will sort of rise to the top, and I always felt that was Owen's place in my mind of Owen Hart. So
yeah, it's very nice of you to say, and I agree. You know, he's sort of for want of a better term, I think he you know, he learned a lot from the screw-ups of some of his older brothers, myself included. And, but he learned a lot, and he was always there for everyone, you know, and he was kind of exactly like you said, the cream that rose to the top. You know, he had a bit of Brett or a bit of Keith or a bit of, you know, some of the other family members, and he seemed to, you know, distill it and come out as a hybrid, you know, because he's, just was sort of a special person, you know.
Absolutely. Hey, let me get to the phones to our next caller. I believe I got the Godwins on. Are you on with Bruce and Johnny Mantell tonight?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Hey.
Mark, is this you?
This is Dennis.
Hey, Dennis, how are you, my friend?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hey. No, my pleasure. What's going on there?
Oh, man,
well,
we're just
much.
Sort of...
I'm looking forward to hearing a few Owen stories from...
Yeah, I was listening to Brian and that. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I know, and I heard he had, kind of partaken a few in-ring and out-of-ring, antics with you guys, you know.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you this. I had some of my favorite matches with when Davey and Owen were together, and I had some of my just the most frustrating matches that you could ever imagine. When they wanted to work, there was nobody better, but the house shows and everything, oh my God, it was too funny. They would like have contests to see who could take like the lowest hip toss, and like we would do stuff that we would set up spots over, you know, the whole time on the road, and then one night they would just change it without telling anybody, and it would just make you so mad. But, you know, that was Owen and Davey. What were you going to do, you know?
Yeah, I saw all kinds of that stuff with them, you know, and I actually did a few tours with Owen, and when they're doing that heart attack tour, and after Owen had turned heel, and it was Neidhart and Owen were... Brett and I were tag teaming against them, and every night Owen was up to some kind of just little pranks, and best thing about Owen's ribs is you never quite knew if they were a rib or whether, you know, afterwards I find myself thinking, why was I getting pissed off? Or what?
I know. Yeah. What can you do? I mean, if it was a pay-per-view or TV or something, you know,
and
just
was,
total.
And you're never quite sure, you know. Was that a rib or did, and everything from Owen having some guy knocking on your hotel room door at 8 in the morning and telling you got to check out at noon and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and you send a lot of people to your rooms in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and afterwards I found myself saying, was that a rip or was that a-hole really, trying to get me up at 4 hours before I'm supposed to check out to get, you know, stuff like that, you know, he's always, but it was always harmless stuff, but,
it was Owen, you know, you just pretty much, you pray for the best and, you just hoped that it was going to be a night that he felt like doing something, but then again, you know, how many matches, you know, you're doing 5, 6, 7 times a week, you don't even really want to do one or two of them. So the rest of them, you pretty much just, you know, we're lucky to have Owen because it made the matches a lot more fun than instead of just doing the same thing over and over and over. But, you know.
Yeah, he never was himself. He didn't mind making fun of himself or poking fun of himself.
No.
Once in a while, too, you know. And,
yeah, that was the thing. Most of his ribs in the ring were on himself, you know, where he ended up looking like the idiot. And he would just, you know, he would laugh harder than anybody. It was great. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, Dennis, I was just going to say, do you have one quick good story? I got so many people wanting to call in. You got one good story we can get out of here with?
Oh, yeah, I got one good one. We were up in, St. John's or Newfoundland or somewhere like that,
And we were at the hotel, and they had these vans that were taking us to the arena. And it was Blackjack Lanza and Tony Gurria were our agents, and we were all waiting in the van, and they were back in their room and everything, and they were getting ready to come out. And Owen decided he didn't want to wait, so he jumped in the front seat and took the van without, you know, without them knowing it. And we drove, like, past the building and around the building, like, two or three times. And none of us are from, you know, Newfoundland, so we didn't know where the hell we were going. And we were just in the thing. We're like, Owen, isn't that the building? He's like, oh, no, you got to go around this way. And he did it, like, five times. So we spent about a half hour on a 10-minute trip. It was he got so much trouble. It was hilarious. He didn't care.
Yeah, but again, but again, harmless trouble, right? I mean, really,
exactly.
Truly, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're up there in the middle of nowhere, and it's Lanza and Tony Gurria yelling at him. You know, it wasn't like Vince was yelling at him, so he didn't really care. As long as everybody had fun.
Well, I'll tell you what. I imagine that Lanza deep down inside was probably laughing. Thinking,
oh,
boy,
of course
that was,
he was.
That was a great one right there. I wish I had thought about that in my day, right?
Oh, yeah, and Tony and Blackjack didn't get to the building until, like, after the show started because of that. It was one of my favorite times of not knowing what the hell was going on, which with Owen was a lot of times.
Well, hey, I think I've got the other one, Godwin, on finally with me.
Yeah.
There he is. Hello, hello. Hello?
Yeah, the infamous.
Hello?
Henry.
Yes.
Mark.
That's Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Nice to hear from you.
Hello?
Yeah, Mark. That's you, Mark. Talk.
Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you, Mark. Go right ahead, my friend.
What the hell's going on? What are y'all doing?
See, that's Owen right there. Owen's doing that.
Yeah. Pushing the mute button or something.
Exactly.
I just got on the line here, so I don't know where you guys are at.
Well, all we're doing is sort of respecting Owen and talking about the business, and Dennis just gave us a good story, and we'd like to hear one from you so we get the Godwin's opinion on Owen tonight.
Well, I told one last week to Kenny from Inside the Ropes. Me and Phineas was working, him and Owen and British Bulldog.
Yeah, I just was telling that.
At Penn State University. And Owen had come out, and we were in the ring for like 5 minutes. And then him and Phineas locked up. And he spit water in Phineas's face. He'd been walking around clapping people's hands and had a mouthful of water and wrestled for like 5-6 minutes and then spit it in Phineas's face.
Yeah.
So that was sort of just classic Owen, little things like that.
Isn't that amazing? It all goes back to the Owen and Davey Boy tag team. I wonder how much trouble they caused for everybody else, just those two guys.
God, I don't know. lots of headaches, yeah.
Lots of
good times.
Yep.
I remember one time we had a guy up here you guys probably know named Brian Pillman. And
we know Brian.
Pillman was a bit of a notorious womanizer type thing, but anyway, we were on the road and we were headquartering in some beach town out in British Columbia, and Owen overheard Pillman, who was on the other side of the stone wall at the beach, arranging a rendezvous with this fairly hot girl after the matches. And I think we had to go to some town that was like 60 miles out or something. anyway, just to get a rise out of Pillman, Owen has this poor hapless road agent come up to Pillman and say that after the matches, I've got you going to the seniors' home to do a say no to drugs speech. Initially, it was just a surprise out of Pillman, but Pillman reacted so vehemently and vociferously. He's like, fuck that, and dropping all these F-bombs. And so at that point, it became a challenge to one, so we ended up driving across town. and waking up this old caretaker who got all these seniors out of bed, and it took them about half an hour or more to get out in their walkers and their wheelchairs.
That's hilarious.
And then Owen tells his caretaker that Brian's going to now do his Say No to Drugs speech, and he's driven across halfway across the country to come here for this thing, and the regional health board had set it up or something. And anyway, Pillman finally does this this speech, and it was about the most half-hearted Say No to Drugs speech you ever heard of. And then in the meantime, Owen gets his old caretaker and says, you don't have any coffee, or you have, you know. Next thing, this old caretaker's, you know, telling Pillman he's got coffee and cake coming, and Pillman's getting madder and madder, but it was like
having Brian do a Say No to Drugs speech would pretty much be like having me and Mark do a Say No to Drugs speech.
Yeah, it'd be like wiping before you poop. Hey, guys, I love hearing the stories. I would love to sit down and hear some more from you. They've got a list of people tonight calling in. To the Godwin boys, I'd love for you to say something to Bruce and the Hart family, and then I'm going to go on to our next caller, okay?
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Tom. Want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead, bud.
There you go. Hey, Bruce, I just wanted to say it was awesome talking to you guys and remembering a little bit of Owen. Tell Brett and everybody that we said hi, we love them all, we miss them, and you guys are awesome. I was just glad to talk to you.
I greatly appreciate it, and I'd like you guys both to know Owen held you guys both in the highest regard. You know, he's used to speak so well of both of you guys, so I'd like to take the opportunity just to thank you guys and thank you for all you did for Owen. You know, it meant a lot to him at the time too. You know, you guys were two of his brothers, so
Him and Davey Boy were both a big part of our career. We knew him for a long time. I knew Owen even before I started down at WCW. But we just want to thank the whole family and wish Owen's better half and the kids. Haven't seen them in a long time, but wish them the best. And we still think about them. And we just appreciate the time we had with them. It was a good time.
Yeah, I appreciate your time coming on here and sharing some of that. And I'm hopeful Owen's kids, maybe you're out there listening to this somewhere. And,
yeah, I hope so.
And just
he was had the perfect little family all the way around. So I hope they hear this and are very proud of their daddy, because we sure were.
We were.
Have friends be friends with him was an honor.
To the Godwins, thank you guys so much for being on tonight, man. God bless you. Thanks for the comments. Have a great night.
Thank you. See you, Bruce.
Yep.
Bye.
All the best. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. Tex.
All right, man. Bruce, some more classic sort of harmless stories about Owen. Apparently, like you said, he had an opportunity to see all the others all before him sort of step in mud and step on dry ground, let's say, and it's apparently that it stuck with him, and I know I got a caller holding right now that we'd like to bring on, and that's the referee that was there the night that Owen left us, and that's Jimmy Corderas. Jimmy, are you there?
Yes, I am, gentlemen. How are you?
Great to hear from you, Jimmy. It's delighted that you were able to get through, and just thanks very much. It's privilege to talk to you.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Jimmy, any of your retrospective of Owen, any thoughts you may have or funny little stories? I seem like I've met you, but I don't know that I have, but I'm telling you, it's great to be on with you tonight talking about Owen.
No, thank you very much, and I'm pretty sure my brains are a little scrambled too, so trying to remember everybody that I've crossed paths with over the years, and I'm sure we've run into each other. I've been listening to the stories with the Godwins and with Brian Blair and just some hilarious stuff. The Godwins were talking about working with them as a tag team. Even refereeing with Owen in the ring was challenging and fun at the same time. I remember one instance in particular, and you talk about when he teamed with Davey Boy, but he also teamed with Jeff Jarrett, and they would also like to have fun too, and they were wrestling Edge and Christian, and I want to say this was in Germany. And, you know, I got distracted by Jeff, of course, and then behind my back, Owen reaches in his tights, and he pulls out this foreign object, and he blasts Edge with it, and Edge is selling like he got hit with a ton of bricks, you know, Christian's jumping up on the apron, and we go through the whole motion, you know, they're creatively hiding it behind my back, and I still don't know what he's got. It's just that, you know, he's hitting him with his foreign object the whole time, and the last thing he does is he hides it under his arm, and I challenge him to lift his arms, and I start counting, and when I get to four, he lifts his arm, and a napkin comes floating down. So for the whole time, the big foreign object that Edge is selling like brass knucks is a red
classic. I was wondering, Jimmy, if you could share with us that other rib you told us about on. I think it was involving the Godwins, but you'd written about it in your book about Owen and livestock or whatever.
Yeah, there was a match years ago. It was a hog pen match or a pig pen match, and I didn't witness it, but apparently somehow the pigs that they had rented for that match somehow found their way into Vince's office. Apparently the guy who delivered them, you know, happened to show up just when Owen happened to be near the back door when he arrived and asked where to put them, and Owen directed him, "Oh, here you go. We'll just put them in here. They'll be fine for a while." And after the production meeting, you know, Vince came back to the office. There's these pigs in the office, and he was, I guess, upset but not upset because I guess he figured out who it was, and you just couldn't get mad at him. It was just too funny.
Hey, I got to tell you, that paper towel, I've seen that done one other time, and it was legendary Dick Murdoch that did it. And when that paper towel floated to the canvas, I think Dick even sort of made a little movement with his feet, like the paper towel had caused the ring to bounce a little bit when it hit it. And so that would be the only thing I would think that Owen didn't quite cover on that gimmick. But I did see that one other time many, many years ago. And again, that's just those are the signs showing you that Owen, even though he was young and little, he watched all you guys, Bruce and Keith and Brett, and watched all you guys grow up and do the stuff you did, and he learned from every one of you, man. I mean, that's a classic. To me, that's the greatest tribute that Owen paid to you guys, is following what you guys did and keeping that heart laughter and heart love alive.
I remember one rib that I think I may have told you this one myself, Johnny, but I remember one time we were on one of those inordinately long, hot, dreary road trips out in the middle of Saskatchewan, which is sort of like the hinterland or whatever. But anyway, you'd been riding for about 8 hours in sweltering van and all this, and we're pulling into this town. Pillman's just awaking from a stupor, and there's this town we were going to. It was called Tisdale, and it says, "Welcome to Tisdale, the land of rape and honey." And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with rapeseed. It's like canola oil comes from or something. Anyway, Pillman wasn't familiar, and he says, "What the hell is that?" He's kind of half foggy, and Owen launches into this thing about, you can believe it, they have the highest incidence of rape and sexual abuse in North America in this particular town, and they're actually proud of it, you know, and they encourage their women to dress provocatively and sit out on the back porch and, you know, kind of, you know, tempt these, you know, people from the nearby prison and all this stuff. But anyway, Pillman used to do these say no to drugs speeches in the ring. It was part of, I think Owen had set that up for him too. But anyway, Pillman went on to this big, long diatribe before his match that night about, "I understand that some of you people think it's cool to, you know, have your daughters and your wives and, you know, engage in, you know, unsolicited sexual whatever, and And the people are all sitting there dumbfounded, and I think Pillman was working with this big heel named Bastion Booger, Mike Shaw, that night, and Mike Shaw gets on the mic and says, "Hey, Pillman, it's their business, not yours." They all started cheering for Mike Shaw and booing Pillman. And I remember years later, Pillman would still be calling me up fuming about, he referred to this town as Tisdale, as Titsdale, and both those idiots who want their wives being raped and all this stuff, you know. And, but that was kind of like one of those Owen things that just sort of manifested itself, you know. But
hey, Jimmy,
yes,
thanks. Thanks so much for the stories, man. Is everything good with you today? Everything's all right with you today?
Yeah. I'm still loving wrestling. I still tune in. I watch as much as I can of as many different products as I can, not just focusing on one. And, you know, like Bruce was saying earlier, some stuff I like, some stuff kind of makes me shake my head a little bit. But, you know, that's... It's easy to be critical sometimes. I try to keep the glass half full if I can, at least, anyways.
I'm not sure, Johnny, if you're familiar. Jimmy does a national broadcast up here in Canada every week. It's on national TV where he sort of does postmortems on the SmackDown and Raw or whatever, and they sort of engage in actually one of the more intelligent and, you know, thoughtful analysis of the wrestling business that I've heard. So I see Jimmy on TV every week, you know, and he's I'm not sure if you get that show in the States or you ever catch it. What's it called, Aftermath? Or?
Yeah, it's called Aftermath. It's I don't believe it's available in the U.S. I think it's only here in Canada, but it's basically to try and explain what it is, Johnny. It's more like a wrestling version of The Talking Dead.
Okay.
Like a post show, and we just recap the show itself. It's more like a you know, reviewing the product as opposed to reviewing creative or something like that. We talk about actually.
Quite often, you guys are more entertaining than the show that you're analyzing. That's so.
Well, one of the best things.
Enjoy hearing your perspectives every week, though.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. And one of the things I appreciate from them is the one thing they told us is, you know, be yourself. And I said, well, I could do that. I mean,
not a lot of guys in the business can, like my dad.
Wow. Well, Jimmy, I'll tell you, buddy, I'm going to look into that, and I'd love to hear it, man. I'd love to hear what you guys do. And like I tell people on my shows, if you go to an independent show or go to a show, if you like it, tell somebody, and if you don't, tell somebody. At least get your opinion and your voice heard, man. Jimmy, mm-hmm. Thanks for calling in tonight, buddy. God bless.
Well, thank you guys very much. I really appreciate it. And
best, Jimmy, and I'd love to have you on any time. I always welcome your insights and your intelligent perspectives.
Well, thank you very much. Anytime, just let me know.
I shall, and I'll be calling you.
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
Right. Jimmy Cordero is calling in tonight. I love the story about the aftermath, man. Bruce, we'll talk about that more another day, but I'd love to hear more about that. I love that concept. I got another caller in the queue. Another star of this business. I didn't have the privilege of meeting, but I've seen her many times on TV. I've read many articles and many things with her name in it. Calling in tonight and helping us give the tribute to Owen that he deserves, Deborah McMichael. Deborah, how are you tonight?
Well, hi there. I'm doing really great tonight.
Great to hear your voice, Deborah. I very vividly remember having a chance to meet you, unfortunately, at Owen's funeral. But I know Owen... He told me that was like the high mark of his career when he was doing the thing with you and Jeff Jarrett down in WWE. Just unfortunately before his accident, you know, he had nothing but the highest regard and nothing but nice things to say about both of you guys. So I know it meant a lot to him that you took from your schedule to even come on and just tell a few Owen stories or share some memories?
Oh, no, he was really special. I used to have so much fun working with him. I mean, he used to keep, me and Jeff used to laugh constantly at Owen. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there were so many funny stories that Owen would do. I mean, I remember sometimes, like, you know, after a match, we're all going to the hotel and you're going down, you know, everybody's rolling the luggage down through the hallways, and he was notorious for, if he, you know, was walking by a room and someone's snoring in the room, he would run down the hallway and he would use the phone to call that person's room just to wake them up. I mean, he would be rolling. I mean, he would do this all the freaking time. I mean, one after the other. I mean, one time I remember we were at, it was somewhere like in Texas. And it was where the audience was, like, behind a curtain, so we were backstage, and we could actually see their feet if we, like, peeped around the curtain. And so for one night, I think it was, he was doing this with Gold Dust, and they found these, like, there was this long clamp thing that they're called, like, pickup tools or whatever they're called. They're, like, you know, 2 feet long, 3 feet long. And so he would reach in between the curtain, and he would grab people by their ankles. And they would scream, oh, my God. And they didn't know where it was coming from because they couldn't see us, you know, because we were behind them. I'm like, and, I mean, it was stuff like that. I mean, and then one time I was at a house show, and he had found this sticker and stuck it on my back, and it said, out of order. And, like, you know, I'm in the ring doing my whole Deborah puppies thing, yada, yada, doing all that with this big old out of order sticker on my back. I mean, it was, I mean, you had to watch him constantly for doing stuff like that to embarrass you. But, you know, it was all in fun. I mean, and then I still remember he was always wearing, like, one boot that was different from the other boot, just to see, you know, if anybody noticed. Or, and you know, he would always hide stuff under the ring. Like, you don't know what in the world he's going to drag out at a house show. I don't know. You know, like, it would be coat hangers one night. It would be pieces of clothing. I mean, you don't know what in the world he's going to have. You know, it's like he's like a pet rat. He would hide it before the match.
That would make it premeditated. So yeah, go right ahead.
I mean, just saying. I mean, and I remember it was down, I would say it was the last autograph session I remember doing with Jeff and Owen. And
yeah, I remember seeing a picture of that. For some reason, I remember seeing a picture of you and Owen and Jeff doing an autograph session somewhere, probably maybe even would have been in KC or something. I don't know. But
yeah, I think, well, let's see. It was in Florida. And it was, well, I remember that one. It was in Florida, and Randy was the promoter that had brought us in. And it was funny because now he's the tour manager for Larry the Cable Guy. And I remember I just ran into him about a month ago, and he actually still had pictures on his phone from that autograph session. And it was just so cool to see those pictures. And I remember Owen would, for that day, I do remember, he, like, changed out my sunglasses, and he put these, like, hideous-looking sunglasses. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I'm trying to be all cute and cool back then, you know, putting on my little glasses, trying to look like a little Hollywood person. And he had switched them out to these awful-looking glasses, and I'm walking out through the autograph session thinking I'm looking cute, not knowing I had on those hideous sunglasses. I mean, you know, he was good at it, those jokes.
Well, Deborah, how is everything good in your world today? I hope everything's well with you.
Oh, yeah, things are great here. I'm getting my master's right now at the University of Alabama. in criminal justice. They'll figure that one.
Well,
good
to your credit. I'm delighted to hear stories like that. You know, people that actually elevate their game after they got out of the wrestling business. You know, because not enough to. You know, they usually go the other way. So I'm happy to hear you're doing well. And but yeah, I'm so grateful, and I was delighted when I heard you might be coming on. You know, because I know you're one of those people that have a special place in Owen's heart. You know, he I remember many a time him just sort of extolling all the virtues, you know, great people you and Jeff Jarrett were, you know, how much he loved working with you guys, and just how much he respected you guys. You guys were really great people and great company. So I'm glad I had a chance to tell you in person, and just sort of glad you saw fit to come on and share a few Owen stories.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I was honored that you guys asked me. I mean, I was honored to be asked to do this.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much. God bless you. Hope everything's well in your world, and congratulations on getting that master's degree.
Oh, you're welcome. And y'all take care.
All right.
The very best, Deborah, and love from the Hart family.
Oh, thank you. And the same to y'all.
Thank you.
Deborah and Michael calling in tonight. Thank you so much. How about that, Bruce? Just some more little, I don't want to say common because they're not common, but some more, you know, sort of non-dangerous, non-lethal kind of humor that Owen had and sort of kept everybody loose and light with, I think.
Yeah, I think it made a great, you know, you would know Johnny because he'd been on the road and all like that, but a bit of comic relief for things that ease the tension or kind of lighten the load or whatever. Owen, that was one of Owen's, you know, strong suits. And I mean, I'd like to also mention just beyond his contributions and, you know, lightening the load and all that, you know, also a very undersung, understated worker. I think a lot of people almost didn't realize. I think he was just on the threshold of really ascending to superstardom. He reminded me a bit of like Daniel Bryan, who was kind of doing a few other roles that were mid-card and all like that, and then he seemed to finally ascend and take the ball and run with it. And I have a feeling Owen would have been like that. You know, he had been sort of in Bret's shadow, and kind of initially when he first came in there, like Brian Blair was mentioning earlier, you know, they weren't pushing guys his size as much. But right around the time when he unfortunately died, he was sort of getting the singles push, and I think he was starting to be recognized. And the thing about it for me, Owen was a phenomenal worker from the get-go, and, you know, it wasn't like he was sort of developing. He was one of the best rookies I ever saw when he broke in. He was kind of like, you know, possibly the best rookie I ever saw, and I think even that Wrestling Observer guy, Dave Meltzer, referred to Owen as the best rookie he had ever seen, but that was sort of one of the, you know, sort of ironic things right around the time when Owen unfortunately died. His career was just starting to really take off. You know, he'd sort of emerged from Bret's shadow and was kind of getting the singles push, and things were just starting to kind of, you know, look like they were going to take shape for him. So that was sort of one of the sad, you know, kind of ironies of the whole thing too. But I didn't want anyone, the listeners out there, to think my only reflections on Owen was as a practical joker, because he was, you know, a really world-class worker. You know, he reminded me of like Daniel Bryan is the closest thing that I can compare him to, you know, and he was also one of those guys that really gave a lot of good energy in the dressing room and was always sort of like one of the team players, you know, and, you know, and you would know, you know, you need that kind of good energy in the dressing room, you know. It sucks when everyone's kind of down and everyone's bitching about the payoffs and the road trips and having to do a job or whatever, you know, and it's nice when you got a few guys that sort of keep everyone's spirits up, and that was one of the other things that Owen really kind of seemed to just innately have a capacity to do.
Well, I think that's a real tribute, again, to him and his family and how he was brought into this business. And Bruce, I want to bring on the air with us now, and I want to tell everybody you're listening to Heartbeat Radio. I'm the guest host tonight, Cowboy Johnny Mantell, helping Bruce out with his tribute show to his brother Owen. And on the line with us now, a dear friend, Owen's a guy for the business and for many years has been a wrestling fan, let alone a wrestling star, the one and only Mick Foley. How are you, Mick?
Hey, I am doing good, and I'm really honored to be part of this show. Thanks for thinking of me.
Thank you, Mick. Honored that you saw fit, and I don't need to tell you, but I'd like people out there to know that Owen was one of your biggest fans, you know. He had the utmost respect and, you know, just loved you as, you know, one of the truly great guys in the business, you know, and he held you in the highest regard. I'm sure you know that, so I just like
thanks, Bruce, and I think the highest compliment, you know, I can pay our friendship is, and don't ruin this for me, and Brett kind of let me know. I was like, no, don't tell me, I don't want to know, but like, I never actually knew what Owen thought of me as a wrestler. You know, like our friendship was based entirely on how we got along as, you know, as people, as family men. And I think of everyone I've met, like Owen reminded me the most of myself. You know, probably the best part of me was what Owen was. So I really enjoyed his company. You know, to this day, missed him, terribly. It was a devastating blow.
He always told me that you were one of those guys that was way more concerned with getting the other guy over than yourself. And to him, that was one of the hallmarks of the really great workers, of the guys that really, you know, made him appreciative of and grateful to, you know. So, He seemed to hold you in high regard just for that. You know, almost everything you did was more designed to get the other guy over than yourself, and it was never about yourself or your ego. It was about the other guy in the business. So, but that was definitely the way he perceived you, you know, and that was sort of like the highest regard he could hold a wrestler in, was somebody that was doing it for the business and for the boys and not just for themselves, you know. And there's not enough guys that are like that, you know. So
I appreciate it. I know that when I was you know, done with the program, we didn't have the same way of gauging you know, the success of a program the way you guys would on a weekly basis, where, you know, you would come in, you'd be able to tell who specifically was drawing the house. You know, like an Abdullah the Butcher would come in, pop the territory, you know, and things of that nature. So I always, you know, and then I guess you could tell, but, you know, with ratings and with pay-per-view buy rates, but since I wasn't in a position for most of my career to be that guy, that, you know, that one guy on top, I always gauged how well my programs went by whether or not the guy I worked with was better off after, you know, after he was done with me. And, you know, I was really proud and happy when someone's, you know, was ready, was in a better position to help the company when he was through, and considered it a failure. Even if we had good matches, I would consider it a failure if it was like, man, I didn't elevate that guy. So I appreciate that, Bruce. I don't know if guys, you know, how many guys think of their careers in that way, but up until like the, you know, the late 98, 99, that was was my primary concern. What can I do for the other guy?
Oh, Owen told me that he sort of identified with you a lot because he said, for whatever reason, he said he and you seem to have more incarnations or personas than damn near anyone. He said you were Dude Love and you were wearing the, you know, the leather mask and you were, you know, Cactus Jack. And you're, no one said he had been the Blue Blazer and he had been high energy and he had been the American Eagle and all this other, you know. And so he said he sort of respected you coming from a promoter's family too, that you were one of those guys who you know, didn't put himself ahead of the business, or you know, he always sort of went about it with a smile, and if they wanted you to, you know, do this finish or that finish, or you know, Owen loved the comic end of it too, you know, he's sort of so he respected that from you too, that you you know, didn't mind, for want of a better term, making an ass of yourself, you know. And he was sort of the same, you know, like, whatever. I think that was one of the reasons why he was that well regarded by his peers, as are you, you know, because it wasn't about you. You're just, you know, not only entertaining the fans, but, you know, the boys were entertained by it too, you know, like they kind of, they enjoyed it, and I think they respected that you guys checked your egos at the door, didn't have any egos to check at the door, you know. And
you know what else? I think, you know, both of us took great pride in the fact that we could, you know, really turn it on, and Owen had those great world-class matches, but entertain not only the, you know, the audience, but the boys, you know. Owen, you know, you know, he would draw those curtain sellouts for some of those matches. I'd never seen someone have a bad match on purpose. And you have to have a lot of confidence until I saw Owen doing it in Scranton, Pennsylvania, with the big giant steps across the ring. And not bad, I mean, not bad in the sense the fans were going, wow, this is not a good match. But, you know, the overselling of certain things, the underselling of big moves, and doing it like you were saying, to keep, you know, keep a light atmosphere on the road. Things can get heavy. You can get a little dejected about payoffs, and then, you know, going into a place like the Scranton Youth Center, back when we used to run that, the payoffs are, you know, are not going to be much of a reflection. And so, if you can get the guys laughing and looking forward to shows like that, that's a big burden off the off the shoulders on nights like that. So I always enjoyed those matches, enjoyed the anything goes matches with Owen, because if we had to, we could really turn it on. But there were other times when we would just go out there, just had fun, and I think that's infectious among the, you know, the fans, even if they know that, you know, these guys are not, I mean, you know, They're enjoying themselves out there, and like I said, I think that's infectious.
Yeah, I totally agree, and as you were saying too, his infectiousness seemed to permeate to the boys as well, you know, or, you know, even sometimes. The good thing with Owen's ribs, I always found, was I was never quite sure if it was a rib or not. Even to this day, stuff that I now reflect back and know, was that a rib or what, you know. Owen was that slick at it that he never quite knew whether, you know, you just some guy was really annoying you, or whether it was, and Owen seemed to have a marvelous ability to impersonate people. So I remember one time there was, I think you may have been down there, was at one of those WrestleManias or one of those pay-per-views, and Owen, for some reason, they had flown my mom and dad down there for this thing, and there's a few of the old wrestlers down there, and there was this old guy named Reggie Parks. I'm not sure if you ever heard of him.
Oh, yeah, the guy who made the belts, yeah.
And he had originally broken in Calgary in maybe the 50s. He's a pretty mild-mannered guy, and he had gone through the ringer down in the dungeon with Stu and George Gordienko and some of those old shooters, and got mauled and stretched and all like that. But anyway, I guess Owen found out that Reggie was down there. He had broken in Calgary and hadn't been around though in about 20 years. And anyway, Stu calls up. I mean, Owen calls up Stu's hotel room as Reggie parks and is kind of speaking kind of really hesitant, stammering, and kind of, Stu, I've got a something I need to, and Stu is originally happy to talk to him, and eventually Reggie's like, when you took me down in the gym in 56 to, you took advantage of me and all like this, and Stu's, what are you getting at, Reg? Next thing, Owen's like, just you and me, Stu, about 10 minutes later, Stu meets Reggie in the lobby, and Stu is kind of all worked up, and Reggie's pretty mild-mannered guy, and Stu comes up and says, take your best on, Reg.
As you tell her that, I'm like, I can't even conceive of doing that same type of rib with my own dad. Like, I can't
and
imagine.
Reggie wasn't sure whether Stu was something he had done. But Stu was like, but Owen was, that was kind of one of the ones I remember. There's so many, but I don't want to, as I said before, digress just into a dissertation on the ribs and all that either, you know, but.
Yeah, I specifically remember he would usually let you in as you were headed out the door. Meaning like in the one case where he had gotten me a really good rate in a hotel room and then called up as the innkeeper saying they'd checked their records and that they'd actually undercharged me and that I was going to have to come down and pay extra money. And now that you get worked up about that, then he starts asking you about wrestling and how fake it is. You know, so, first you're going to charge him more money, now he's going to insult what you're doing. And I remember I almost got him to pop because, I was using some line that somebody else had told me. You know, he goes, you know, he was a Scottish man on this occasion, you know. And he said, and just how much of that wrestling is fake? And I said, we try to keep it at around 27%. One guy got up to 30, and we had to let him go. And then later on he told me, he goes, you almost got me. You know, you almost got me to pop. And he goes, oh, Mr. Foley, that's very funny, but I saw you stamping your foot on the ground. You know, and then he gets you, you're like, I'll be right down. That's when you hear the laugh and he lets you in. But I know what you mean. You don't want people to think it was all about the ribbing, because so much of his legacy was what he was able to accomplish in the ring. I've still never seen like the groundbreaking stuff he did in Stampede, you know, and he really took the world by storm. I've yet to see that, or some of the I did see some of the great stuff he did when he was in New Japan coming in. Hard to believe that he had as little experience as he did when he went over there. You know, I guess growing up in a wrestling family will give you confidence and experience without actually having the ring time.
I was actually blown away. I was booking when he started, and we were sort of getting the territory reopened, and we'd been kind of struggling and hadn't been really going that well. And Owen, my dad was reluctant to even put him in the ring, but Owen, I guess, was getting screwed around on his scholarship at the university and told Stu he wanted to start working. And he was like, I think he had been such a student of the business, but he had been watching Brett and Dynamite and Davey and all these guys leading up to that time. And he was just like, bang, the second he hit the ring, he was like, just incredible, you know. And when he was working up here, he was working with a lot of guys that up till that time hadn't really set the world on fire. They had been kind of mid-card, and we had to sort of, I think you might know that old Mike Shaw or Bastion Booker or whatever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was
Owens.
And he was doing some kind of cheesy heel thing as a born-again Pakistani, and and Owen was sort of contributed to that. It got good heat, though. They had, you know, Mike Shaw with this Ravi Shankar music blaring going out when he was coming out, and he had a turban, and he was, and I think they just had some big unfortunate charade where some Air Canada jet had been bombed by the Sikh terrorists. So there was a fair bit of heat, and Owen had Mike Shaw talking about Sikh and ye shall find and all this other stuff. But anyway, Owen worked with him, and most of the fans used to refer to him as Toilet Bowl and all this other. But Owen, you know, they did some incredible business. It took off, you know, and Owen sort of, you know, almost made it a personal issue to get Mike Shaw over, and he ended up doing, you know, about a 2-year run as a top heel up here, which is,
and then,
you know,
and that was probably the direct reason he got the call from WCW. And
oh yeah, he went down there where Eric Bischoff or whoever I think turned him into whatever the Norman the Lunatic.
Norman,
yeah,
he came in as a heel, and then you know, he became the. I worked a bunch of times with him. Matter of fact, I think my first WCW pay per view was with Mike when he was, you know, kind of turned into lovable Norman and really had something good going there. And then, as you know, sometimes it's just you know, replacing the Booker came in, and I don't think Ole was a big fan of his. It was a shame because he really was on a roll there. But I think the point is that, you know, if Owen hadn't brought that, you know, that out of him to where he had that top run, you know, the heads wouldn't have been turned. He probably would not have gotten that call from WCW.
Yeah, no, Owen seemed to, you know, that's the really great worker seemed to have that innate ability to work with damn near any different. Was a Mike Shaw or one of those fast Japanese guys, or you know, guys like Bad News Allen, or he seemed to adapt to almost any style without missing a beat, you know, and that's often not that easy, you know. It's easy enough to work with the Dynamite Kids and those guys, but a guy like Mike Shaw, you know, we had a lot of other guys up here that you know, couldn't have those kind of matches with him, you know, and Owen seemed to be able to bring out the best of him, you know.
I got to interject here something, and Mick, I got to tell you, it was great seeing you a couple years ago up with Dominic, and I look forward to seeing you this summer in Oklahoma City on your Legends tour,
good,
man.
Oh, good,
the missus and I are going to come see you and hopefully spend the evening with you and tell some good stories. But I got to interject something right here because you both are saying the same thing, and I don't know, Bruce, you grew up in the business. Mick, you've been a long-time business kind of guy with this business. And what I'm hearing you both say is sort of classic to me, because when I started in Los Angeles, the first thing that Leo Garibaldi and Mike LaBelle and my brother and Chavo and all of them told me was, go watch The Champion. And it was Dory Funk at that time coming through Los Angeles, working with the local babyface, the local star.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than
this. And they would always leave. Dory would always leave on Friday night after the big show. Even though he didn't lose his title, he made the guy he was working with much better. And I think, again, I got to interject this right here, because you both are saying the same thing about Owen. And, Bruce, you said that's what Owen liked about Mick here. And when I think of you, Mick, or I hear these stories about Owen, that's what comes back to my mind is hearing – Leo Garibaldi telling this 18-year-old punk kid, go watch Dory Funk. Go set up in the balcony and watch down and watch how he controls the people and controls the crowd and makes who he's wrestling better. And I really think that that's what this business is all about, is making each of us better by what we do in the ring. And I'm sorry I had to inject that, but I hear you guys saying it, and I just had to say that, man.
No, it's a valuable point.
I appreciate your – that was very valid and – good insight, and I might add that another of Mick's old buddies, Dory Funk's brother Terry, was epitomized that too. You know, they were guys that had that innate ability to make almost anyone they worked with look in many cases better than they deserve to look, you know. But yeah, that's to me one of the things, the hallmarks of the really elite workers is, you know, being able to make whoever damn. And I remember Dory Funk was like that, and Terry was like that, and anytime I ever saw Mick, it was like that, you know. Anyone can, you know, work with the great workers, but it takes a great worker to take, the great Kelly or something like that and make them look like, you know.
I never pulled that off, I can assure you.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of on a roll, you know, when I was doing the independents before I came back to WCW in 91. And, you know, you're under the impression you can make anybody look good, and then you find out, you know, there are just sometimes not meant to be, you know. And I don't want to name names, but there were some guys you just kind of threw up your hands. You just say, you know, I did the best I could.
The Magnificent Zulu Syndrome or
Hey, Mick and Bruce, let me real quick, man. We got another member of the Hart family calling in. Let me bring Ross on just for a few minutes to say hi to Mick and get a quick story in.
Yeah, hi, Bruce, yeah. And hi, Mick, and Johnny. And Mick, I really enjoyed your comedy show you did in Calgary last year, and it was great hearing some of your stories of the business. And you're still lighthearted and good-humored about this business, because it can be so stressful, and with all the injuries and the traveling and sometimes the lousy payoffs and, you know, all the negatives, you still find a lot of good humor and enjoyable stories to tell about your experiences, and it was great hearing that, and I hope you'll be back up this way for another tour sometime, Mick.
Well, Ross, I appreciate that, and I had a great time there in Calgary, and it was so nice to have, you know, some of Owen's family there, and Diana was there, Natty was there, and
yeah.
I am going to be coming back in September, and I hope you guys, you know, this is something entirely dependent on, you know, how the family feels, but I know when I had Brett saw the show in Montreal, and had Jason Sensation, you know, do a little skit with me where he played the dual roles of Diamond Dallas Page and Stone Cold. And then Brett came up and joined me for the Q&A, and we ended the show with Jason doing Owen. And it was really moving, you know. It was really like something special. Like, it's the closest you're gonna get. Like, it's almost like he was there with us, you know. It was Jason.
Oh, wow.
So good at doing Owen. If you know, with the family's blessing, I'd love to bring Jason up to Calgary and have him do that, you know, for you guys as well.
I'd love to see it. I'll definitely have to find out when you're coming up. Be delighted to take it in, and I'm sure our family would be delighted to lend their blessing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure what
the venue is. We're doing like 20 dates in Western Canada, like, you know, British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan. So it's a pretty major deal. I'm not sure if it's at the same place or not. It might be, but, you know, those dates will be up if anyone wants to check the dates. It's realmickfoley.com. And,
as long as you're not having to drive in a broken-down old van to get to those places, you'll be all right.
I'll be okay. The last time I was up in Vancouver, I had your niece Lindsay taking me around. Lindsay and Theo were my tour guides, and it was great to hear all the stories. And you know, it's such a compliment to me when, you know, someone says that, you know, when someone says you remind me of my Uncle Owen, it's like, man, it's quite a compliment.
Absolutely. And Owen thought a lot of you, Mick. He enjoyed being on the road with you, enjoyed working with you, and he had the utmost respect and regard for you.
Yeah, just
thank you.
as a person, not just a wrestler.
Yeah, that was the most important thing. Ross, I was saying to Bruce, and don't ruin this for me if you know the answer, I never actually knew. I never really, and now, I guess Bruce has answered it by saying Owen really respected the way I tried to go out and, bring out the best in other people. But I remember, after he died, I was like, I really don't know what he thought of me as a wrestler. And that didn't matter, the fact that we were, we loved talking about, we were the type of guys that would rush back, and get on that 6 a.m. flight, and do as many things we possibly could with the family. And, you go out, same thing, you try to have fun on the road while, in a different way, we didn't see the our hotel rooms as prison cells, enjoyed. The key thing is lighthearted, but also respect the relationships at home.
Yeah,
I think
that's probably one reason.
Hey, Mick, again, thank you for being in. I know I apologize to everybody early tonight. I got so many people wanting to call in and make a tribute and say something, and I know you're on a busy schedule. It looks like when I was looking up your dates, man, you're working every day. God bless you. And, buddy, I promise you that me and the missus, look for the cowboy walking like a wrestler with the cowboy hat on in Oklahoma City.
I'll be looking forward to it. And Ross and Bruce, thanks for taking, making the time for me on this program. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. It's our pleasure.
I look forward to seeing you in September,
Mick. God bless you, Mick. We'll see you in the fall in Calgary.
All right. I look forward to it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care. Okay. Bye.
Bruce, Ross, I keep getting these phone calls. I keep getting people calling in. I know I got a couple calling in here in just a minute, but I've had somebody holding. We had the wrong number or the wrong something written down for him. I didn't realize it was him. I want to bring Mike Lano onto the show. Oh, I'm sorry. We dropped off again. We'll have to get him back on. That's okay.
Yeah,
Ross, you doing okay, buddy?
Yeah, I'm just great. But Mike knew Owen very well from Owen's trips to San Francisco and the Bay Area there. And Mike was one of the best photographers who caught some of Owen's great moments in the ring and even outside the ring. And, I'm looking forward to hearing Mike if he calls back.
Yeah, likewise. A great guy, Mike, and one of those old school journalists that really put the business over. And I've never heard anyone say a bad word about Dr. Mike.
Okay, hey, Mike, are you on? Mike,
yeah, guys,
we got you.
I really appreciate it because I know you guys had a ton of great stars and stuff, and there isn't a week that goes by when we don't think of Owen and, of course, Helen and Stu. Really miss them terribly. But I'll be really brief. I don't have my notes in front of me as I had earlier, but I was with Owen in both New Japan when he and Benoit were there. Jericho, of course, worked a little bit later for Tendru's group, but this was New Japan, and room with them a couple of times in 1990 at the Keio Plaza Hotel. I think Owen had transitioned. He'd come in for WWF and worked as Blue Blazer, and then I think that was the interim. And then I was with him in Joel Goodhart's promotion, a huge mega card in Philadelphia. It was Joel Goodhart's very last TWA show, the predecessor to ECW, and that's where I think Owen met Mick Foley. And I posed him with Terry Funk, and this is Owen with Terry Funk and the Sheik, the original Sheik, and Kevin Sullivan, and just a wealth of talent. Abdullah the Butcher was no stranger to Calgary, and just tons and tons of people. And in terms of stories, Owen, whenever he would come into the Oakland, San Francisco, Northern California area, there's some famous Hart relatives, his aunt and uncle, as Bruce knows, and I drove Brett there once. But every time Owen came in, he wanted to go see them. They lived in a real well-to-do, fancy, it's called the Piedmont area of Oakland.
Yeah.
And Windsor Avenue.
Yeah, really nice. I mean, that was how devoted Owen was. Anytime he was on the road, et cetera, he would call his wife, Martha, and the kids, et cetera. And he was so ethical, There's the ribs and all that stuff, the gentle ribs. He was certainly no Johnny Valentine in terms of mean ribs, but he was so fond of Jeff Jarrett. This was towards the end, and Deborah, and drove around with them. And every time I see Jeff Jarrett, he's always thankful. I took tons of pictures of them on the road and at diners and stuff. And at an autograph show, they were all booked in Northern California by this guy who's sort of made a living and a lot of money off booking Bret for stuff. But this same promoter, you know, he had had a set fee and what have you for Owen to sign for people, and then when it was over, this promoter tried asking Owen to sign, you know, can you sign an extra 100 photos, 8x10s, and when you're gone, I'll sell them at my store. And Owen looked at him, and I've never seen anyone else, you know, do this. And Owen said, you know, if I do this, it's going to devalue my autograph and my signature and all of that. And he was dead serious. You know, and a lot of wrestlers would have not given an intelligent rationale for not wanting to be taken advantage of. And Owen did. And there was another great story at the Stu. You know, I covered since 1966 for the magazines, the Mark Mags. I was a photographer and writer, covered every territory except Calgary. And that was on my bucket list before I die. And Bruce, who's like a brother to me, so kind to invite me up with Russ. And Owen and Spicoli, that was his best friend at that time, you know, his roadmate with the WWF. They picked me up at Calgary Airport. I've told this to Bruce before. And Owen, if anyone has ever ridden in the car with Owen, you want to take over the wheel and not let Owen drive, because we couldn't see. The snow was coming down big time. It was December 14th, 1995. And Owen's cursing like a sailor. And I don't know how he got us to, you know, where we had to be. The Hart Mansion, I think it was, before doing press, in one piece without getting us killed. But then we go to the hotel. We go to the hotel where everything is happening, and I'll never forget this. Owen looks, and he sees Razor and 123 Kid, and they look like two messes against each other, sleeping against each other on the couch. But, you know, you could tell they were messed up, and Owen said something like, those guys are really effed up, aren't they? And Spicoli and he just were on the floor with Pillman laughing and laughing and laughing. And all those shots I've got of Owen and Pillman and Chris Jericho and the second Dan
Dorian
Crawford.
Terry,
not,
I think.
Not the original Dan Crawford, but, you know, the one that was in all
Japan. Yeah, Philip Fleur, yeah.
Yeah,
I saw a few of them.
On the floor laughing, you know, it's just being around Owen, it was really, you know, now you look at it and you treasure the times that you did. And I think all of the big stars you've had on, from the Godwins, et cetera. And, you know, I'm going to be sending Bob Johnson some pictures to put up of Owen posing with the original Sheik and Abby and Mick, of course, the first time they ever met. And even Medusa put this parrot on Owen's head, and Owen didn't balk at it. His big giant macaw, these photos I have of him climbing all over Owen. He's just a wonderful, wonderful person, and you don't really meet anybody like that, real genuine, great people in wrestling. But I can tell you, before people really discovered him in WWF, if you could only see what I got to see right at ringside of him in Japan, with the mask, without the mask, in Mexico. And then I'll shut up. He filled in for somebody. I don't know who he was scheduled in Germany for Otto Vons against Terry Funk. And the people, you know, they didn't really know who he was. But when he went in there, he just blew them away and had an amazing match with Terry. I think it was the first, it might have been the only time they ever had a singles match, but it was a 2 out of 3 thing for Otto Vons in Europe. Oh, then one last thing. At that Joel Goodhart show back in Philly, he was wrestling, I think it was Kunihiko Kobayashi, New Japan, pretty famous worker. I think that was the guy's name. But anyway, the audience was so dumb. You know, they were chanting Chop Suey. And when we get to the back, you know, backstage, Owen is talking to Sheik and Abby. He goes, you know, he just couldn't believe the crowd was chanting Chop Suey, which is a Chinese, it's an Americanized Chinese food, at a Japanese worker who was, you know, that caliber. And they had a 5-star match. The ring ropes broke. The one guy lost his boot, the New Japan boy, lost his boot, and they had a 5-star match, and so when they stopped chanting Chop Suey, they gave it a standing ovation. You know, everybody was screaming, 5-star match. They didn't know who this kid Owen Hart was, but he blew everybody in hardcore Philadelphia, New Jersey away, and that's just a testament to the great Owen Hart.
Wow.
Mike. Very well put, Mike. I appreciate that.
I had notes in front of me, but here I had to really go fast because
you
guys have a bunch more important people.
Notes, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, we're sorry about the disconnect
on
the numbers
you.
And stuff.
Yeah, it meant a lot to me to be able to talk about Owen because he just was one in a million and great person like all of the Harts who are family to us all. But we just miss the guy to this day. And, again, we all think of him. And the business had a real huge part of its heart torn out when he passed. It's never going to be the same, and it isn't the same. It's been like 15 years since Owen passed.
Yeah.
Oh, and another thing, that party school, it's about a 40 minutes away from me. It's number two ranked now with Pepperdine near Malibu, where all the movie stars live, is the party school of the U.S.
Mike, wow. Thanks so much for calling in tonight. Mike, God bless you, my friend.
Yeah, oh, same
care
to you
and
guys.
Thank
you so much.
In Las Vegas.
I'm going
to
see everybody. Mike, and Bruce, love to Bruce Hart because Bruce is the best.
Thank you,
okay,
Mike. And once again, thank you for coming up here on Stu's 80th birthday thing. You did an incredible job of photojournalism, and it meant a great deal to my dad and to all of us. You know, so we were honored
absolutely
by your presence.
Mike,
all
thanks
right
for sharing your memories of the one.
You
take
bet,
care,
man. Thanks, Mike, so much. Hey, Bruce, Ross, we're closing up on our time where we got to get off so we can get this Jeff Jarrett interview on at the end of the show. I do have Barry Orton on. Hey, let me bring on Barry Orton real quick. We got about 5 minutes, guys. Barry, how are you tonight? Johnny Mantell, Bruce, and Ross.
Hey, Johnny. Hey, Bruce. Hey, Ross. How you guys doing, man?
Great to hear from you, Barry.
Always
a pleasure, and one of Owen's favorites. Owen has the.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
I'd like to say Owen held you in the highest respect, and you had some incredible matches with him up here in Calgary. So I'm delighted that you saw fit to call in, and thank you.
Well, you know, I feel like that he deserves it, and I owe it to him, and I think that everybody should remember him. And I was just listening to a mic for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and I was just going, my God, it's going to be hard to top that because he was speaking so highly, and he had such endearment that I was just going, my God, how the hell am I going to add anything to that? Because it was a hell of an honor listening to him tell those stories. My issue is that Owen, of course, to me, was one of the first guys I ever saw do the acrobatics and just the way that he filtered it into what he did and the timing of it, and he never overdid it, and it was always a surprise when he did it, and he was just amazing. He was like, I'm sorry I'm all tongue-tied. I was so into what Mike was saying, man. I kind of like blew me off into another part of the universe.
I know Owen, as I've told you before, Barry, he had the utmost respect for you in the ring and the job you were doing. You were sort of like one of those cutting-edge, visionary-type guys who really was about 20 years ahead of his time, and Owen used to tell me that, how much he loved not only working with you, but just sharing perspectives with you, you know, and you sort of came from the same background with, you know, your dad and your Stu, you know, so you guys were sort of second generation, and Owen had a lot of, he always felt like sort of a kinship toward you, you know, and I can't tell you how many times Owen used to be just amazed and incredibly impressed with the stuff you were doing up here, and I don't think a lot of the people maybe outside of Western Canada even have any idea how great the Zodiac stuff you were doing up here. It was like 20 years ahead of its time, and I venture to say I haven't seen anything as good as that in WWE or anywhere else. I definitely, and I think you know how well Owen and all the other hearts held you and your brother and your father in great respect.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate that. I really do. And you know, it was an honor working with Owen, and it was easy. And you know, it was always an honor working with you as well. But you know, Owen was just a master on so many levels. I think last night I compared him to Picasso. You know, because wrestling is, after all, a craft and an art. And he was just a natural, man. It was inherent in you know, everything within him. And so, yeah, he was phenomenal on so many levels, you know. And he got it, and he understood it. And he was able to generate an energy every time we were in the ring that you know, lifted me up and of course wanted me to do the best that I could do as well. And you know, it's an honor working with him, and it's just really regretful that, you know, the world you know, it was kinda like the world had something taken away from it that was gonna, I think, flourish, and by now, my God, it would have been unbelievable where he would have been and you know, the things that he would have accomplished.
Absolutely. Barry, I got to tell you, I want to thank you. I'm sorry I got you on late. I'm trying to get everybody in that Bruce wanted me to sneak in, and I hope that we can continue this conversation another day. I got an interview I got to play here at the end of the show, and from all of us here at Heartbeat Radio, from Bruce and Ross and everybody, we wish you the very best, and God bless, my friend.
And same to you guys.
Barry. Okay, God bless you, Barry.
Same to you
all
guys,
right.
And God bless you, man.
Hey, Ross, Bruce, I hate to cut it short, man. I had a couple things I wanted to say on, but we got about a minute before I got to go to this interview with Jeff Jarrett, and I know you want to get this on at the end so the fans can hear it. So a real quick good night from Ross and Bruce, and I'll turn it over to the interview.
Okay, thanks, Johnny. Well, I just want to thank all the fans for thoughts and memories of Owen and how much he contributed to the business, and he just put smiles on faces of wrestlers he worked with, guys that he traveled with, promoters, and thousands of fans everywhere, and it's great that they're still thinking of him even 15 years after, and he still keeps all of us alive.
I'd like to thank everyone for their input and just sharing some Owen stories tonight. Awesome job, Johnny. I can't thank you enough for the great job you did of moderating, and I'd like to thank everybody else for coming on today. I'm gratified.
Well, man, I want to thank you. I want to thank Ross for the kind words. We were together just a week ago, and the kind words from the family and the great visit we had, and Bruce, our conversations, I can't tell you how meaningful they are to me, because we talk about some of the names of the past that not many people talk about anymore, and in listening to the stories and listening to the stuff about Owen tonight, I'm going to take one thing away from this night, and I'm going to tell you that, and that is family, family, and family. And sometimes family always, we don't always get along. Sometimes we dispute, and we sort of see things differently. At the end of the day, it's still family. And whether it's family by name or family by business, we're still that family. And I felt that tonight hearing the stories about Owen. I felt that tonight hearing the stories about how important this business was. And, you know, Bruce, you and I have talked about it. Ross and I talked about it up in Amsterdam this last week, that this business is very important, and it has to stay relevant to the world today. And I think this show tonight, telling the life and times and the stories of Owen, has really spelled that out on how important this business is.
Very well put, Johnny. I couldn't agree with you more. And I hope some of the people listening out there, you know, got some satisfaction and maybe even some inspiration from hearing some of the stories, and I totally agree, and I'd like to just once again thank everybody for all their input, and God bless.
Absolutely, and God bless everybody listening to this interview. It's Bruce Hart and Jeff Jarrett. Good night.
Yeah, I'll just start. I just like to point out to the wrestling fans out there, it's a real honor and a privilege to have one of Owen's closest friends and colleagues in the wrestling business, Jeff Jarrett, here on the show. And Owen not only had the highest regard for Jeff as a wrestler, but also as a person, and he was one of the guys that Owen had the most respect for in this business. So I'd like to point out to any of the fans out there, Owen and Jeff sort of had similar backgrounds. They both were sons of well-known wrestlers and promoters, and I think they grew up in the business, so that may have been one reason why they identified with each other and had so much in common. But anyway, it's a real pleasure to have Jeff on, and I'd just like to, you know, maybe endeavor to get some Owen stories and maybe a few perspectives from Jeff, you know, even I guess just I wouldn't mind hearing just you know, unfortunate night that the accident happened, you know, just a bit of perspective what it was like, and then maybe after that we can tell a few Owen stories, maybe including some of his infamous practical jokes and some of that other. But yeah, welcome aboard, Jeff, and I won't mind just getting a bit of perspective. It must have been kind of somewhat surrealistic that night that the in Kansas City, May 23rd, 99. But yeah, I wouldn't mind getting some perspectives on you, just sort of if there's anything that really stands out or you might recall leading up to it or whatever else.
Bruce, I'm making sure I'm trying to hear you. Just the connection's a little rough. You want me to, what was going through my head the night of May 23rd?
I won't get too much into it. I just, you know, just sort of what it was, you know, the scene that night, maybe leading up to it, and if there was anything that really stood out in your mind.
Well, first off, I appreciate you having me on the show, and you said it very well, that me and Owen, we had, like yourself, had very similar backgrounds. Both of our fathers were wrestlers and promoters, and that's one of the things that obviously connected me and Owen the very first day we met. But with that being said, it was one of those things when me and Owen would make trips together, get together, and you know, all the time we spent hours and hours and hours on the road together, is that we didn't really talk wrestling all the time. We would on occasion, and obviously when we were, you know, partners, we would definitely be talking wrestling. But in general, we used to talk about life and family, and with Owen's personality, it was never a dull moment. And so, quite frankly, you know, this show is honoring the 15th anniversary, but I don't, And I've never really given that night a lot of thought, even back in the days and weeks and months that followed the tragic accident. You know, I like to remember Owen, you know, on a 1,000% positive note, because that night was quite simply, you know, one of the most tragic nights of my life, of this industry. And you know, it was very it was a very unfortunate situation. I can't even describe. You know, I know the pain that I felt and that wrestling fans felt, but I can't imagine the pain that the kids went through and that continue to go through. But, you know, like I said, I like to look back in my memories of Owen, and he's world famous for his infamous practical jokes, pranks, riffs, whatever you want to call them. I did an interview not long ago, and Owen's name came up, and they said, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about Owen? And 9 times out of 10, most people would probably say either a great wrestler or the number one prankster of practical joke. The first thing that comes to my mind is integrity. Owen just had it. He had it, and he carried himself. himself in a way that was very unique. I guess I could say non-traditional wrestler-like, because he had a viewpoint on life that was second to none. He knew his priorities. They were family first. He loved this business, very dedicated to it, took it very serious. You know, he could have a great match with just about any style. And so, you know, those are the top line thoughts off the top of my head. And you know, May 23rd, 99, I don't really like to think about that night.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, and I appreciate the other perspectives. You know, those are some of the things I myself prefer to remember on in that light too. It's almost forgotten. There are a lot of people almost don't realize, first off, what a good person Owen was, and he's one of those guys who always, I know up here, and whenever I did a few tours in WWE with him, and he always seemed to give off good energy. You know, he was always upbeat in the dressing room, and I more than a few times I'd walk in there and guys had had a long day, or you know, they were kind of down, or a few long faces, and Owen seemed to always bring up the energy level. You know, he always seemed to have something good to say, or he'd, you know, be up to some kind of mischief or something. He always seemed to give off good energy, which sort of picked up the boys. And in the ring, he was, I always thought he was underappreciated, and certainly in WWE, I think, just around the time when he unfortunately died, I think he was finally starting to be appreciated. Maybe he'd come out from Bret's shadow or whatever, you know, and was being recognized for being, you know, a great worker. You know, he was, just like you said, and that's the highest compliment you can pay to a wrestler, is that they can work with damn near anyone and make them look good, you know. And there's only a handful of guys, yourself included, that are capable of that, you know. And Owen was one of those types who he could go out with some guy like the great Kelly or Mark Henry and make him look good, or he could put in time, or he could work heel or face, or adapt to almost any situation. And those are some of the things that are almost I thought were almost underappreciated in WWE. I think some of the boys knew that, but all too often a lot of the fans, I don't think, were quite aware of how gifted and how really talented Owen was. And those are some of the things I hope some of the today's fans might remember or be made aware of relevant to Owen. And as far as the practical jokes go, they bring a smile to my face, but I know he pulled, he seemed to pull them on anyone and everyone, you know. That one referee who I think is supposed to be on our show, I think he was the referee the night when Owen was in the ring, that Jimmy Corderas. But he was telling me about that rib Owen had done with, I guess, the Godwins or something like that, and they had brought all the, some livestock shipper had brought all these cows and pigs and horses and whatever into the, I guess they were doing some kind of a gimmick match with the livestock, but this guy arrived at the arena, I was told, and he asked where he was supposed to put this livestock, and I guess Owen dutifully led him to Vince McMahon's personal dressing room with the leather couches and all the amenities, and told him that the cows and pigs and whatever else were supposed to be put in there. So this guy led them all in there, and I guess about 2 hours later, Vinny arrived for, you know, get ready for Monday Night Raw or whatever, and it was all of a sudden like cow shit and pigs and chickens and whatever else roaming around in his dressing room. And I guess Vinny initially was up in arms, but I heard he burst out laughing afterwards when he heard maybe Owen was responsible for it, you know, kind of recognized the humor of it. So that was sort of one of the ones that kind of
brought a smile to my face when I heard that one, but there might be a few you might have had pulled on you or may have been witness to, Jeff.
The connection's not the best, but that's all right. I can hear most of what you're saying, but yeah. Well, you know, Owen, and as I sit here in my office thinking about the different stories, and actually I've got a picture in my office of me and Owen, and, you know, everybody knew his practical side or practical joke side and all that, but, you know, as far as being a mentor in the dressing room, he would put suggestions and he would, you know, give suggestions to young guys or old guys alike. And, you know, Owen was very well respected for his ability in the ring, and they knew that he was as technically sound as any athlete who's ever wrestled, and also he had a passion for it and really loved the business. And, you know, he would tell me about his stories in Japan when he was going over there, and it's just something where he grew and evolved from Mexico to Japan, obviously, and then his WWF run. So very, very well respected wrestler.
Yeah, I appreciate those perspectives, and I was going to ask you, Jeff, if you know, given that you were one of Owen's closest friends and colleagues in the business, is there anything you might like to say relevant to his kids, Oge and Athena? You know, they're both pretty young at the time. I often wonder if they even kind of knew their dad, you know, that well. You know, they were both pretty small at that time, 15 years ago. But yeah, I was just wondering, Jeff, if there's any perspectives or reflections on Owen that you might like to share, maybe for his kids, Oge and Athena. They were both pretty young when Owen unfortunately died. And is there anything you might like to say relevant to Owen, to his kids?
Yeah, I mean, Martha has done a fantastic job raising OG and Athena, and you know, she's a wonderful person. After Owen's passing, you know, with the foundation, and she continued her education and you know, gave those kids a great root, great foundation, and you know, OG and Athena, they realized their father was a man's man, a wrestler's wrestler. Everyone in this industry had the utmost respect for Owen. His legacy and his passion for the business, and his passion, more importantly than the business, for life, will continue on and on and on forever. And that is something that you know, gives comfort to anyone who loved Owen.
I think that was very well put, Jeff. I greatly appreciate that, and I'm sure they'll be moved by that. And I'd just like to thank you, Jeff, for coming on. If there's any anything in winding up that you'd like to say, you know, that'd be fine. And I'd just like to thank you very much again for not only coming on today, but for everything you've done to perpetuate Owen's memory and everything you did at that time. You were a great source of comfort to our family. I remember when you came on Monday Night Raw the day after the accident, and the speech and the things that you said meant a great deal to our family, especially my mom and dad. They were quite moved by what you said, and you were also a real pillar at Owen's funeral. I can't say enough about how helpful and supportive you were. So, you know, I'd like to just thank you again for all of that, and appreciate all you've done.
Well, you know, I appreciate you having me on the show, Bruce. You know, the it goes without saying, the Hart family is legendary in this business. You guys have had your ups and downs, but you're the Hart. And Owen was that special and unique, and I don't mind telling you or any of the Harts, Owen was so super special, not just to me, but I know he was to your family and the wrestling fans. And, the night after his passing, that was very difficult. But I, you know, at that time I was overcome with emotion. But I wanted to tell the world that this, you know, and I've said it over and over, Owen had integrity, he was real, and he was just a man's man. And I was lucky and blessed enough to be, one of his good friends and colleagues and coworkers. And, you know, I'm thankful that I have Owen Hart memories for the rest of my life. And thank you for having me on, Bruce.